Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege serving as anchor of the show. It's an ensemble show, lots of good people involved, and it's hosted by its founder, a great woman, Carol Marx, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. On her program today, she'll be speaking with Dr. John Hunt, who's a pulmonologist and allergist immunologist and a tenured associate professor at the University of Virginia, and he's going to talk about his latest book titled Assume the Physician, Modern Medicine's Catch-22. That's coming up shortly. But let's kick this hour off now with Carol Marx in conversation with a fascinating woman, Catherine Esty, Ph.D. She's a social psychologist and a founder of IBIS Consulting, a recognized leader among diversity and organization development firms across the nation and internationally. She's also a former consultant to the United Nations Development Program and UNICEF. She's going to talk to Carol about her new book titled $27 and a Dream, How Muhammad Yunus Changed the World and What It Cost Him, published by Catherine Esty Company. Yunus founded the microcredit movement that has empowered millions of poor women in nearly 100 countries.
When you first met Muhammad Yunus, and that was in 1994, when you traveled to the country that he lived in, Bangladesh, what made him instantly become your hero, and he still is?
Well, here he was a banker, but he was a totally different kind of banker. He lent money to the very poorest of the poor, and he lent money to women who had never even touched money before. They were mostly in Bangladesh. It was in the countryside. Women were really confined to their homes. They couldn't go to market. They just had lives really just in their own houses. And he got them to, he had this view that they could have these businesses and could earn money and provide better for their children. And so he started lending money to them. And here he was, a Muslim man. We always think of them not so interested in women's rights, but he has focused his life on lending to these poor women. And this concept, which is called microcredit, small loans, he promoted that around the world. So from the small start of a few villagers in a small village in Bangladesh, there are now 100 million people that have these small loans, where before him, people, banks would not lend money to the poor people. They said, well, you have to have some collateral. And of course, if you're poor, you don't have any collateral to put down. So that's all this made him my hero, his concern for women, his concern for the poor, and spending his life trying to eliminate poverty.
What a remarkable human being. Now, what I found also very interesting was that one of his motivations for helping the poor and feeling that one person could change the way things were done was that he had spent time in the U.S. and he'd seen some of our cultural changes. So he knew that they could come about.
That's absolutely true, because in Bangladesh, things change so slowly, and it's such a backward country. But he had been here, and he was here, you're exactly right. He was here in the 60s, and he was a graduate student, and he saw the civil rights movement and took part of it. And he was in Nashville and in the late 60s, and he saw the kind of cultural revolution with the kids. In his country, young people just did what they were told, and he was just floored by the kind of way the young people were able to actually shift the culture. And I think that conviction that change was possible is what he learned from his time in America. And he took that back. And when he arrived back in Bangladesh, which was called the basket case of the world, it was a country with all these natural catastrophes and meant a high level of poverty, he had that conviction that he could make a difference. Maybe just to one or two people, but he could change things and other people could change things. And he did believe that everyone could be an entrepreneur. So that conviction is what kept him going for many, many years on his mission to eliminate poverty.
In 1976, he loaned $27 to a group of 42 villagers. And wasn't it amazing that they actually paid it back? Was he surprised, or did he think that that was going to happen?
Well, he had the trust, but no one, not a bank in the whole country, would lend to the poor people. And these people that he lent to, he took the money for the loan right out of his pocket because no bank would give him money. And these were people that were really enslaved by the money lenders, who they were, each day they had to give all their profits back because they had these little debts. And he realized when he did a little bit of an investigation that these 42 people, their total loan among them all was only $27. And so he took out that $27 and gave it to them, and then had them week by week pay back a few pennies of a few pennies. And he was, I think, surprised that they did. He thought maybe some of them would, but the fact they all paid back, and this just was a eureka moment for him, because it flashed at that moment that this is what he could do with his life. He could spread this understanding that the poor could be trusted with their loans, and he spent his first about 40 years getting that word out around the world.
Now, he started a bank, the Grameen Bank, and it was very difficult for a typical bank because it actually was a social business. So for those who don't know, what is a social business and how is it different from a non-profit organization?
It is, it's a good question. It is, a social business is one that is a business in that it's trying to make it profit. I mean, he believes that the way to help the economy and end global poverty is to really do it through businesses. But he said many businesses can become social businesses and focus on not only making a profit, but using that profit to address some kind of a social problem, like lack of medical care or poverty or lack of educational facilities for kids. So instead of just the people that run the business, instead of pocketing the profits, they turn them back to society. So it is a business, but it, unlike a not-for-profit, it really is trying to make profits and use them for bettering the world.
And I would be very remiss if I didn't mention the fact that Yunus, being the entrepreneur that he is, started many other successful companies, and I was really impressed about one of them, and that was the Grameen phone. Was it hard to get cellular phone service started in Bangladesh, and how many subscribers does it have today?
Well, it's the largest phone service. I mean, what's interesting about that is that there's no electricity in the countryside of Bangladesh. It's still without electricity, so there's no landlines. And so the only way that communication could be started was through cell phones. And so when he first started, each village, one woman got a loan from the Grameen Bank and started a business where people that needed to make a phone call to their relatives or to the hospital would come and pay a few pennies to use the phone. And soon there were like 250,000 women with these phone businesses. So today it's, I don't know exactly how many millions, but it is the largest cellular phone. And to this day, there's no landlines in most of the villages in Bangladesh. So it remains even more important than in America, where we, of course, have two, the landlines and the cells.
Now, getting back to Muhammad Yunus' dream of helping the poorest of the poor dramatically improve their circumstances, unfortunately, it seems no good deed goes unpunished. So what happened to Yunus' position as managing director at the Grameen Bank in 2011? Why did it happen, and how has he handled his ouster from the bank?
Well, it
seems
true.
Horrible.
It is true that the Prime Minister of Bangladesh has been jealous of him, and it's true that at one point when she was in jail for corruption, he kind of threw his hand into the political arena, but quickly pulled it out when he saw that that wasn't his mission, and people didn't rise up and follow him. So he kind of quickly stopped, but she's never forgiven him for that moment, and she thinks she should have had the Nobel Peace Prize. So she got the government to say, come up with excuses and sort of accusations, and one of them was that he was too old, which is very timely for our show right now. He was born in 1940, so he's 74. But at that time he was 72, and they said, oh, anybody that is working for a government bank, executives have to be out when they're 60. But they hadn't mentioned that to him for those 12 years. And he, of course, he said, and it's true, his bank isn't a government bank. It has, the government owns a few, like 20% of the bank. So he feels it was sort of just trumped up, and I think the people that I know and talk to that I trust feel it was trumped up charges. by a jealous and vindictive prime minister. And he fought it, and he was gracious. He never is, he's one that doesn't like conflict, and he's always trying to be gracious and polite, and that's the way he's handled himself. When the Supreme Court said he had to step down, he stepped down. But then he just took his enormous energies. I mean, he works like 12 hours a day and turned it to trying to promote this new idea of social businesses and to get that idea out in the world, because now microcredit is kind of well accepted, and now he sees his mission to do the same thing for this second idea, which is the idea of social business. So he's going around the world. I heard him on September 30th. He was up at the University of New Hampshire talking to a huge crowd of university students and local people and talking about social business, and they had a competition among them. And he's just going around with the same spirit, and he never talks bad about this woman. He just moves on ahead. He's a great role model for handling adversity, and also he certainly hasn't slowed down. I mean, he, as I said, he is now working as hard as ever.
And you know, he's also a wonderful role model for all of us about making positive change. We've got to be bold and persistent and not let those obstacles out there deter us from doing some good in the world. So very, very admirable. And you know, I had not really heard about him, and so many people, I'm sure, haven't. So your book serves a wonderful purpose, and he just has been able to empower poor women in nearly 100 countries, and that's very, very admirable. And Catherine Esty, you are also a role model for us when it comes to writing about social justice, so I want you to keep up your good work you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, I have been very encouraged, and I think I have learned a lot myself about, you know, challenging all the stereotypes about what older people can do and what they can't do, and, you know, just remembering that these stereotypes may not apply to me. So, really you don't have to listen to the naysayers who make you feel weird, perhaps, about your passion. So I've been talking back to that inner voice that tells me to give up and moving ahead and,
never, never.
And finding that, you know, it's not all obstacles. Once you move forward, there's some, small miracles will come your way.
That's Catherine Esty, PhD, in conversation with Carol Marx. Her book is titled $27 in a Dream: How Muhammad Yunus Changed the World and What It Cost Him, published by Catherine Esty Company. Coming up next, Carol Marx in conversation with a man who wrote a book titled Assume the Physician, Modern Medicine's Catch-22. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
A domain name is your key to doing business around the world, right from your office, living room, or even your couch. And finding the right name is as easy as a domain name search at hostingforcheap.com. Just enter the domain you want in the search box, and we'll give you the results, along with similar domains you may not have considered. Most people looking for goods or services start on the web. Unfortunately, many small businesses can't afford to pay someone else to build their website. That's where hostingforcheap.com comes in. We can show you how to create a website for yourself, because hostingforcheap.com isn't just about domain names. It's a one-stop shop for anything you need to get online, from building your own website to attracting new customers to securing their data when they make a purchase. Hostingforcheap.com has you covered from the moment you decide you want to put your business on the web. That's hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is the host of the show, Carol Marx, in conversation now with Dr. John Hunt. He's a pulmonologist and allergist immunologist and a tenured associate professor at the University of Virginia. And he's going to talk to Carol about his latest book titled Assume the Physician, Modern Medicine's Catch-22, published by Hunt John Publishing.
What made you leave your work in the United States and move to Liberia, West Africa, to treat children? Can you tell our listeners about a few of the pluses and minuses of living in a country that has few rules for government agencies, and that includes health care?
Well, it's certainly a different world. I pulled myself away from clinical practice in the United States maybe four or almost 5 years ago now, out of frustration of dealing with insurance companies and the strange way that people think about healthcare and how they allow insurance companies and clerks to interfere with the process that should be just between doctors and patients, a very personal process. The whole system in the United States became frustrating for all concerned, and yet there seemed to be this laser-like focus on getting everybody health insurance as the solution to it. When I was sitting there in the thick of it, thinking that health insurance was precisely the problem and the opposite of the solution. Because it's very hard to change a whole system. All you can do is kind of build a new system and see if people come to it. And there's new systems being built throughout the world. And in Liberia, which is in West Africa, and it suffered extensive civil conflict, the government institutions were pretty much obliterated, and people were creating their own systems. But it was very, 4 years ago, it was very low, very impoverished, and remained so. When I first went, I was the only pediatrician in the country. And
wow.
It was just a huge amount of bang for the buck, and it wasn't the frustration of the insurance companies.
And I think, talking about the health insurance, it's the fact that it's been drummed into us on and on for so many years that everybody must have health insurance, and with all the people having it, that's going to bring the price down. And so we've just become, it's like Pavlov kind of thing. Do you agree?
I think so. I think that, when I look at it logically, I see that health insurance is the overwhelming reason why health care is so radically overexpensive. And so getting health insurance as a solution to its problem is kind of like, putting the thief in charge of the stores. It's what causes health care to be so expensive, and it does that by taking away the connection that usually exists between the person who's making a decision and the person who's paying for it. Usually, if you're going to buy a car, you pay for your car, you value how much that car is worth and decide how much you're going to pay for it. But in healthcare, there is a huge disconnect. Someone else is paying for our decisions for the most part, and the result of that is that prices just go through the roof.
And we don't get as concerned and outraged as we should about the medical costs of our things that we need, because it's usually paid for by a third party and we don't have that direct connect. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your novel, and it made me look at, I will never look at hospitals in the same way again, ever. And that's good, because it gives you another perspective. And you have on your cover of your book, one of the most unusual things, you have these, I think they're really sweet, sheep with stethoscopes around their little necks staring at you. And that was a name that the hospital workers gave to the people who worked alongside with in that hospital, the sheep's pen. And what I found out was that everybody in that hospital, you could give a name of an animal to. And the sheep goats, what were they? Because they were, here they are on the cover.
Yeah, the sheep. Generally, healthcare workers are very dedicated people. They're very focused on helping the patients to feel better, to get well. And they are so overburdened that they work very hard at that, and they don't have time to pay attention to what forces are controlling them from the outside. They don't have time to fight against it. So many of them, in my mind, function as kind of sheep. They do their job, but when somebody tells them to look in a certain direction, they all look in the same direction, and not necessarily thoughtfully so. It's not because they're dumb people. They're extremely bright people, but all their intellectual energy is focused on making the patients better, and they don't realize that there's another system out there that is telling them to go in directions that they shouldn't go. So the sheep are those who just follow the rules and do exactly what they're told thoughtlessly.
And there's so many people that really do that. And now I've got to ask you about the pigs, because they're mentioned in connection with the health insurance companies. So how did you come up with that connection?
Well, health insurance companies suck a fair amount of the resources out of the healthcare system. And they are not terribly different than the pigs from Animal Farm, George Orwell's Animal Farm, and that they make all kinds of rules and insist on everyone following them, but then they don't bother to follow them themselves.
So I love that.
That's a reflection of that same concept from Animal Farm. And they also roll around in the mud, which I think the insurance companies generally do. They don't mind being dirty.
Right, and making people go through a million hoops to get what they should get.
Why do we Why do we tolerate these things? And, of course, the book isn't, you know, it's not animals. It's these are human beings in the book, and they're just I just reflect them a little bit to the pigs and the goats and the sheep and the critters in the farmland, basically along the lines of Animal Farm.
And, you know, I learned something from your book that is so stupid and crazy, and that was because your book is all about, you know, the rules and regulations that the hospital personnel have to work under, and they keep getting more of them. And what I found so outrageous was the fact about the tests that doctors order, because every patient has to get a clinical diagnosis, supposedly, before they can order the test. So how does it happen that doctors have to guess the right code that they think a diagnosis leads to? And you know what? Guessing is never good.
Yeah. There's so many strange rules that are all focused around price controls and cost controls that are dictated from above as opposed to dictated from below. And some of the results of that is these strange rules about how we can bill and when we can bill and you know, what lab test is justified by a diagnosis. I mean, you can't order lab tests until you have a diagnosis that justifies the lab test, but as a doctor, oftentimes you get the lab test in order to try to achieve a diagnosis. So we get left with making things up and putting things in charts just to satisfy some insurance billing coder someplace so that we can actually get our work done. And to a great extent, I think doctors are lying right and left to try to achieve results for their patients that they think are reasonable, but the system doesn't allow us to do legally.
That's Dr. John Hunt in conversation with Carol Marx. His book is titled Assume the Physician, Modern Medicine's Catch-22, published by Hunt John Publishing. For more information, go to the website trustedangels.org. I'm Michael Harrison. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine, and plenty more coming your way when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're at the point in the program where we're joined by our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey, who, during his day job, is the vice president and executive editor of the trade magazine Talkers that serves the talk radio industry, an operation with which I am also involved. And Kevin is in the certainly the position to be able to comment on what's going on behind the scenes in the talk business. Now, Kevin, this past couple of weeks, Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, has been talked about so much that he even pulled a stunt that very few people do, and that was, I know, last week, and we are still counting the polls for this week. Last week, he was number one, which is usually reserved for the president of the United States, with his Bridgegate. And kind of an interesting political story that, wouldn't you say, kind of transcended the normal left versus right party line thinking?
It did. It did indeed. It's rare that a topic of where a Republican is the subject of controversy it becomes the most talked about story. But at the same time, remember, the far right considers Chris Christie a rhino, a Republican in name only.
Exactly.
They didn't like his being friendly with President Obama after Sandy, and they're leery of him. They think that he's too much of an olive brancher, a guy who's willing to, cross the aisle to be something done. So It was an unusual occurrence. It doesn't happen a lot.
It certainly is interesting how he was attacked by interesting factions for different reasons. And you pointed out he was attacked by people in his own party who see it as an opportunity to get rid of him to pave the way for more conservatives. Let's face it, he's probably the leading name out there for the presidential nomination.
He's certainly one of them, yep.
So he's not, just the governor of New Jersey. And as the election cycle gets faster and faster, we're already in the election of 2016. And basically, at this moment, it's Chris Christie against Hillary Clinton, who has her own issues in her own party in terms of old wounds between her and Obama. And new wounds between her and Elizabeth Warren, who is emerging out of Massachusetts with the further left faction of the party, saying Hillary's too in bed with the Wall Street boys. So that's a whole other story. So we're seeing inner party politics beginning, and it's not as clearly defined as left and right. So Chris Christie, who I think the Democrats would love to see disappear because they see him as a strong candidate against Hillary. The Republicans on the far right see him as a liability. They want Ted Cruz.
That's right.
There's all kinds of subplots going on in terms of the capitalization of his present day woes.
You're right, absolutely. For the Republicans, Christie's not conservative enough. For the Democrats, he's too much of a populist and therefore a threat.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
Well, it makes what we do fun in following talk radio. And thank you so much for joining us. Kevin Casey, the Vice President, Executive Editor of the trade publication Talkers. Folks, it's open to the public whether you're in the industry or not. You can find out what's going on in talk radio by going to talkers.com. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Hello?
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined the rest of the hour by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, who's in conversation now with Dr. Rick Hansen. He's a neuropsychologist and the author of a book titled Buddha's Brain, The Practical Neuroscience of Happiness, Love, and Wisdom. And he's going to talk about his latest book, Hardwiring Happiness, The New Brain Science of Contentment, Calm, and Confidence, published by Harmony Books.
Let me start off by saying we need to change and hardwire our brains because we're not really wired initially to take in the good stuff. We're wired to kind of fester over the bad, aren't we?
Yes, that's exactly right. Scientists call it the brain's negativity bias, or as I put it, it makes the brain like Velcro for bad experiences, but Teflon for good ones. So we tend to obsess about bad things in life, including as we age. And on the other hand, we lose opportunities to turn ordinary experiences into inner strengths of various kinds, resilience and happiness and love for others.
You know, just that one initial statement made me feel better because I find that so many of us do. We will obsess about something that didn't go well rather than all of the good things around us, and it makes me feel a little bit better that, okay, this is the way my brain was wired. Was this kind of a survival thing when it first evolved?
Yes, it's totally normal to be this way on the one hand. On the other hand, this design feature of a Stone Age brain is a kind of bug in the 21st century. Our ancestors needed to both get carrots, as it were, food, mating opportunities. They needed to avoid sticks like predators. But the difference between a carrot and a stick is that if you don't get that food today, you'll have a chance at some food tomorrow. But if you fail to avoid that stick, that predator, that natural hazard today, whack, no more carrots forever. So we do various things like continually scan for bad news, overreact to it, and then immediately store the whole experience in emotional memory. Meanwhile, we miss lots of opportunities to recognize the good facts in everyday life and turn those good facts into good experiences that in turn we take inside to build up new brain structure.
Now, this is just not the old power of positive thinking, because that won't do the job, will it?
No, you're exactly right, Steve. Most positive thinking, most positive moments of any kind are just wasted on the brain. That's the dirty little secret in psychology, coaching, human resources training, and all the rest of it. We're good at activating positive states, but we don't turn them into neural traits. And for me, what this book's about, and really the opportunity in general, is to take charge of this caveman, cavewoman brain in the 21st century, and instead of being pushed around by various forces, our life situation, finances, our body getting older and the rest of that we actually take charge of the structure building processes inside our own brain by using everyday enjoyable experiences.
And you have a program within the book that's called, it has the acronym HEAL, Have, Enrich, Absorb, and Link. So how does that work?
Sure. Let's work backwards. Let's work from the end. In other words, people want to, me included, get the good stuff inside. In other words, we want to grow inside all kinds of things, positive outlook, a sense of self-worth, a feeling of meaning and purpose in life, determination, character virtues, and all the rest of that. How do you get them into yourself? Well, that means you've got to change structures in your brain. And in the famous saying in neuroscience, neurons that fire together wire together. In other words, we build structure in our brain, which then shapes how we feel and act in life, by turning experiences into neural structure. Unfortunately, as we've talked about, the brain has a bias that turns bad experiences into bad structure. So we got to help the brain, turn good experiences into good structure. Thus, the HEAL acronym, H-E-A-L, the first step quickly is to have a positive experience in the first place, usually because you notice one you're already having, a typically mild but authentic experience. You get something done, there's a nice moment of with a friend, maybe you listen to Steve saying something interesting and you go, that's a good idea. All right. So now you got it going. You have that experience. You have that mental state. Now we have to turn it into neural structure for it to have any lasting value. But it's easy. The second step is E for enrich. You just stay with the experience 10, 20 seconds in a row. so it starts transferring from short-term memory buffers to long-term storage. You can also enrich the experience in other ways by feeling it more in your body or helping it be more intense. It's kind of mechanical deep down in the brain, you know. Get those neurons firing together so they wire together. And then the A step is absorb. It just means that you can sensitize memory systems. You can make your brain more like a sponge for the good stuff by intending and sensing that the experience goes into you. Those are the three basic steps. It's like a fire. You light the fire, you add fuel to it, and then you warm yourself beside it. And then if you want, the last step, just finishing up, is link. It means you can hold both positive and negative material in awareness at once so that the positive experience, let's say feeling cared about, can gradually soothe and associate with and even replace that negative experience that's related to it, like feeling not so cared about when you grow up.
And this isn't something that you have to go through either a lot of training to be able to do, nor is it terribly time-consuming, is it?
That's exactly right again. What I've done is draw on thousands of studies, really, about the neuropsychology of learning, especially emotional learning, personal growth, personal development, including the cultivation of happiness and inner strength. And what that science shows is that we're continually changing the brain for better or worse, and unfortunately, it's got that negativity bias that makes it turn for the worse. On the other hand, if we just look for those opportunities, as you say here, a handful of times every day, you know, half a dozen times or more, less than half a minute at a time, to actually register the positive experiences that are available to us or that we're already having, to help them really land and sink in. It's a kind of gift to yourself, and it's especially important if people are frazzled. You know, if they're sandwiched between their kids on the one hand and aging parents on the other, or they're grappling with financial changes in their life or health issues or losses or the prospects of losses. It's especially important if you're being challenged by things to take in experiences to build up resources inside to meet these difficulties.
And by really rewiring the brain, you can enhance relationships. Certainly you can enhance, as you say, hardwiring happiness, but also just perhaps your immune system, everything. I mean, this is just a total transformation of your body, isn't it?
I know. It's a deceptively simple but incredibly powerful practice because, as much science shows, as you're indicating, positive experiences strengthen the immune system. They make us stronger. They don't make us soft and weak. They actually make us tough so we can deal with the difficult things in life. And when you do this, as you're indicating, you create positive cycles because it's the essence of self-reliance. If you use the skills I write about in my book to turn ordinary experiences into inner strengths and inner peace, you gradually become, you have more to offer to others. They start treating you better. That gives you more positive experiences in a wonderful positive cycle.
And the book is just, I really enjoyed it, and it's very, very readable. How long do you think someone would take before, while practicing this, the few seconds a day when the moments come up, how long before they would kind of sense there is a change in themselves?
Honestly, within the first day. That's been my experience, and I've completed a study through the university, with collaborators from the University of California, that's indicating much the same thing. Now, people have to actually savor the experience. They've got to stay with it a dozen or two dozen seconds straight. It's not just positive thinking, as you said.
Right.
But if people do that within hours and certainly within days, you'll really feel a difference.
And the thing is, you know, it's such a good feeling that comes over you. And like you said, the brain science of contentment, calm, and confidence, it's not like this is something that you're going to fight, your psyche's going to fight, your body's going to fight. You feel good, don't you?
I know, that's what's so interesting about it. You know, as they say in a gymnasium, what's the most important exercise? It's the one you'll actually do, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, the nice thing about this is that it's very enjoyable, and it has a lot of implicit benefits, because when you take in the good, that's my kind of casual phrase for this process, when you take in the good, you're treating yourself like you matter. You're really having to be in the moment in terms of mindfulness, and it turns you into a kind of appreciation of your life, and it gives you a feeling that instead of being so pushed around by life and your reactions to it, in effect, you're more like a hammer than a nail. In other words, you're taking action. You're taking action on your own behalf, and action that really bears fruit.
Dr. Rick Hansen in conversation with Steve Wiseman. His book is titled
Hardwiring Happiness, The New Brain Science of Contentment, Calm, and Confidence, published by Harmony Books. For more information, go to rickhanson.net. Steve Wiseman returns and is going to talk a little bit about New Year's resolutions when we continue with A Touch of Gray.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, we come to the final segment of this hour of our presentation, and we're joined again by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. He's an attorney, he's a prolific author, and he's an expert on scams and fraud. He is the webmaster of Scamicide.com. He's the author of The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. And he's here now to talk about something that is still quite appropriate, it's still January, New Year's resolutions. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. Well, we're finally in 2014, although I'm still writing 2013. Not as bad as some years, but it's a time for making New Year's resolutions. It's a time for breaking New Year's resolutions. But here's one that I think we all should do, and that is, you know, deal with your essential planning. And we call it estate planning, which certainly doesn't make people want to do it because it's talking about death. But it's really your life planning. And there are certain things that we should do. Everyone should have a will. Everyone should have a durable power of attorney. Everyone should have a health care proxy. Everyone should check out the beneficiary designations on their retirement plans and life insurance. And if you don't have a retirement plan, start one. These are really basic things that we all need, because the defaults, if you don't do these, aren't very good. And the first thing is the will. Now, what you need, and everyone really needs a will, and one of the things that we need to do is deal with not just our assets, but if they're young children, you want to deal with guardians. You also want to deal with your digital assets now, your life online, and be able to have that dealt with in your will. Durable powers of attorney. If you become incapacitated, you want to have someone that you want able to manage your financial affairs, and you may want to put some limitations, even though it's the person you pick, on what they can and cannot do. If you don't do this, the courts are going to have to get involved if you become incapacitated. They will name a conservator, and that person may or may not be the person you want. So think about it. Get that durable power of attorney done, and then, of course, a health care proxy. Long way from the old days of living wills, of just terminating treatment or not terminating treatment. The healthcare proxy puts someone in your position. If you're unable to make the healthcare decisions for yourself, you can appoint someone to make those decisions for you. And maybe it can be the terminating treatment, but not necessarily. It can also be authorizing treatment. So you want to do that. You want to make sure that you've got the person you want. You want to talk about it with your doctor and your healthcare agent so that you're all on the same page, and make sure you have HIPAA authorization in this healthcare proxy. Don't just grab one off the internet, because you're going to need that HIPAA authorization so that people can see the records. And then the final thing is your beneficiary designations on your retirement plans. Make sure they're up to date. Just recently there was a major case where a ex-spouse got the assets from a retirement account because someone had not changed their beneficiary designation. So the bottom line is, make it a resolution this year. You're going to take care of your estate and financial planning, and at a minimum, get that will, durable power of attorney, healthcare proxy, and beneficiary designation. You'll feel better.
Thank you, Steve. Interesting information, and a happy new year to you. Steve Wiseman joins us every week at this time, and he is the author of the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. And scamaside.com is the place to go if you've been a victim of fraud or you want to avoid being scammed. A lot of good information there. Steve Wiseman, thank you. And thank you, Beverly Santinello, on the front line, our producer, making this program come together. Thank you, Kevin Casey. Thank you to the entire Touch of Gray broadcast team. And most of all, thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of this fine radio program. You can find out more about us at atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, your friendly anchor, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.